Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:13 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 5th. Well, there are a couple of things I'd like to talk about today. The first is Google. Its earnings came out yesterday. Their margins are contracting, and yet the share was in positive territory today. So that's important. That certainly highlights that people want to own this share. So, and it is now squarely above the trend mean. It has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. It has confirmed at least near-term support in the region of 1,000. And that's suggesting that we are back in a demand-dominated environment for at least the near-term, potentially the medium-term. So that's certainly something that's worthy of consideration. Then we have the fact that Treasury prices were steady in here today. And there is a big war going on in terms of the arguments surrounding the bond markets right now. And so far, the view that the Federal Reserve is done with raising interest rates is carrying the day. But this looks like a consolidation above that 121 area. And the most recent dynamics have been downwards. But so far, the move above 121 has held. When we start to think about what are the arguments about the bond market, well, obviously the first one is that there is a pile of new bonds that are going to have to be either refinanced or issued this year, and that is going to potentially represent indigestion. The countervailing argument is that the Federal Reserve is done with raising interest rates, that they are generally speaking, when they start cutting interest rates, that's because they fear a recession, so that the bond market is starting to price in that we are not so far away from a recession. And really, it's going to be a sustained move below 121 is going to be required to really question that hypothesis that the bond market has in fact reached that conclusion. So for the moment, at least, that latter argument is carrying the day. Eventually, we are going to get to a point where there is a lot of new supply coming to the market and there will not be enough buyers. And that is likely to represent a contraction in bond prices and a rise in yields, but not yet. If we start to look out further out along where we can anticipate events starting to evolve, well, there is the realistic possibility that either the European elections in I think April or May are going to have a result that is going to give a big boost to populists in Europe, and they're going to get a much bigger portion of the vote, and therefore that is going to bring the argument about austerity right into the public fore. Or it's going to be in 2020 when we have the US election and potentially a progressive candidate leading the Democrat Party into the election. That's certainly going to create a lot of discussion as well. So those are certainly important points that are out there on the horizon that are potentially deleterious for not just treasuries, but just about all bonds. Because if we do get modern monetary theory being deployed, it is going to potentially represent a catalyst for a race to the bottom in terms of currency devaluation. That's one of the primary reasons people are interested in gold. And the gold price has been really quite steady. It has been rallying in a pretty consistent manner since October, following that big upper dynamic which broke the sequence of lower rally highs. When we look at it on a weekly basis, then it is within a 3-year range, which does look to be part of a much wider 6-year consolidation. And there is a clear rally now back up towards the upper side of that range. Well, in order to really demonstrate that we are back in a demand-dominated environment, then it's going to have to break above the upper side of this range. But what we are starting to see is interest starting to flow back into gold miners for the simple reason that there's a good many miners are making money at an all-in cost of between $8 and $850, and the price is well in excess of $1,300 today. So that is a pretty impressive margin. In fact, you don't see margins in the mining sector like that very often. In fact, It's when you look at the software sector is where you generally see margins in that order. So that is starting to stoke investor interest in the gold mining shares, not least because prices have been stable and have been trending higher for the last few months. And the other, I think, interesting point in here today is that some of India's largest companies are looking really quite favorable. Reliance Industries is probably going to benefit from the winding down of Reliance Communications, and it will probably acquire that company's assets at pretty attractive levels. Then it's also benefiting from the fact that Narendra Modi is going to try and buy the election, either by, well, actually, probably more like both by spending a great deal of money and then shaping regulations to give a boost to his primary demographics. And some of the most traditional supporters of the BJP have been the small shop owners. So that is probably going to represent an issue for companies like Walmart and Amazon, but it's good news for Reliance considering that they are also starting to compete in the online retail sector. And then if we look at Tata Consultancy, it has a reasonably similar market cap to Reliance Industries, so it's the second largest share in the country. And having had a very impressive first half of 2018, it's had pretty orderly consolidation, and now it is firming from the region of the trend mean. So that's certainly starting to highlight the fact that it is the consumer-oriented shares in India are now leading the way higher. And the rupee has been reasonably steady, having unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. I'm posting an article today from Jeffrey Soat, and he's quoting someone talking about the fact that the primary driver of Wall Street is the knowledge economy, and the primary driver of the emerging markets is resources and heavy industry. But that's clearly not the case with India. They already have a well-developed consumer economy. I think one of the things that people tend to focus on and is perhaps outdated thinking against a background where we're getting the increasing prevalence of a digital economy is the energy intensity of economic growth. That was highly relevant in the first and second industrial revolutions, where you first had steam and then gasoline driving the pace of innovation. But the third industrial revolution was driven by the semiconductor, and arguably the fourth is being driven by the advent of the internet. So if we then think that the third industrial revolution also had an innovation in terms of energy because of nuclear, and there is the potential that this current industrial revolution is also going to have some form of innovation in terms of energy, but it's likely to be highly dependent on data. And it is the growth of the data-driven economy is the primary driver of this bull market. And that brings us back to Google, because it's a data-driven company. And I was in Phoenix at the in the middle of January, and I was rather interested to find that despite the fact there are a lot of news stories going around at the moment talking about in rather excited terms both about Waymo's autonomous vehicles, how the what the condition of the ride is and how the cars are getting around. And then also I've seen a number of articles saying that they've met with protests and that there have been rocks thrown at the cars. My experience in Phoenix, and I wasn't staying very far from Chandler, was the complete oblivion that a number of the people I met along the way and asked them what their impression of was autonomous vehicles, to the extent that they were even aware that there were autonomous vehicles, that they were pretty much oblivious. So That really tells us that we are in the early stages of this move. There was news today that Waymo is in discussions with Renault and Nissan in order to roll out its autonomous driving technology. That does represent a very big potential market for Google if they can get it right. And of course, that is a big if. But it does represent a big new product segment for an already large company, and that is potentially one of the reasons why the share has been doing better. Now, it is much less consistent now than it was previously, so that $1,000 level has to hold regardless of what the potential upside is. But it contrasts, I think, rather well with the outlook for Apple. Because Apple is certainly rallying in here, and it is unwinding a very deep oversold condition relative to the trend mean. But it's going to be a while before Apple comes up with a new kind of product that can beat the iPhone. And it is that lack of vision and I guess see-through to what it is that's going to drive the next round of clear innovation rather than the adoption of a subscription business model, which is a business plan change rather than a product change. These are some of the issues that I think investors are starting to parse right now. And Amazon probably cuts between both because it's already got a very large market. Its business plan is almost completely dedicated to building out its business, getting increasingly more subscribers, and selling an increasingly wide range of products. And it is right in the region of the trend mean, having been down earlier in the week. It was in positive territory in here today, but this is right in the region of the trend mean. This is exactly where it needs to find support if it is going to continue to vindicate the buy the dip strategy, which has really been the clear winning strategy for investors over the course of the last decade. So when we look at the Nasdaq, it has pushed back above the trend mean, and there is a short-term overbought condition right now. Eventually, we are going to get a higher reaction low on Wall Street. We have not seen it yet. And the more that these indices rally, the greater the likelihood is that we're going to get some form of pullback. But the further they can push above the trend mean, the greater the potential is that the next consolidation, when it occurs, is going to occur above the trend mean. And that would be very bullish indeed. So we have certainly seen a big dislocation in the market. We have seen a big inconsistency. Generally speaking, markets do not recover from those kinds of inconsistencies immediately. They generally take some time. And there is the potential here that we could see markets ranging for a pretty prolonged period. Now, that also has to be, I think we have to at least think about where is the yield curve right now. The yield curve spread is still around 17 basis points. And that suggests that we do not have a very clear see-through in terms of the bond market's perspective on the potential for additional upside. The other point, of course, is that it is really all about liquidity. And the size of central bank balance sheets is a big arbiter of exactly what we can anticipate. And this is an evolving range that we have on this index. So when you take the assets on just about all the big central banks and then you rebase to US dollars, you get approximately 20 trillion. And that figure has been pretty static over the course of the last month. It was the rally in this measure that really helped to stoke investor interest from December. So I do think that we have an overbought condition and that it is on it. Is in ever in excuse me, it is inevitable that we are going to get some form of consolidation eventually. Now, when we look at what's going on in Europe, then it was a positive day in here today. And the euro was a little bit steadier, excuse me, it was a little bit weaker in here today. The Euro Stoxx index is starting to come back up to test its sequence of lower rally highs, and it is just about in or it has just about unwound the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. This isn't exactly the most consistent trend in the world, but today was a positive move, and it was driven by earnings, which came in reasonably positively. When we take a look at the euro, there is no denying that the eurozone needs a weaker currency more than the US dollar. Then, when we think about the fact that the ECB said that they were going to or stop adding liquidity to the market back in November, but it has increased pretty substantially since then. So that's, I think, one of the more important points, that even though the market was anticipating the ECB would stop raising the size of its balance sheet, it hasn't done so, and that represents a headwind for the euro. At the same time, when we think about the Federal Reserve, they have been toying with the idea of slowing down the pace of balance sheet contraction, but they haven't done it yet. So that contributes to some strength in the dollar. Where we have the clearest argument against the dollar is in some of the resources oriented economies, and the Brazilian real and the South African rand are all now trading above their respective trend means. When we look at some of the consumer-led ASEAN markets, then the Indonesian rupiah has also been steadying up in here, and it is now trading above the trend mean. The Philippine peso, which has been among the weakest currencies in the region over the course of the last 5 years, has also been steady in the region of its trend mean. If it can sustain this move stronger than it, then that would really be a suggestion that the devaluation has run its course. Well, the Chinese market is closed it today, and it's going to be closed for the rest of the week for the Chinese New Year holiday. The most recent move that we had was some weakening. There is the realistic possibility that China is going to embark on some form of stimulus, whether that is monetary, fiscal, or both. It is looking increasingly likely that it is going to happen. And when we think about the outlook for those mainland companies listed in Hong Kong, well, the H share index has broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and that's been a pretty impressive downtrend. Going from 14,000 to 10,000 in the space of a year is a significant deterioration, and now there's the potential that we're going to get some additional upside within the context of a market that's been ranging in a volatile manner for a decade already. So think that there is certainly the scope for some of the most oversold markets to begin to unwind oversold conditions. We have already seen impressive rebounds, and that is raising the potential that the next consolidation, when it occurs, is going to occur above the trend mean. One of the I think the interesting commodities that we see right now is lumber, and it was limit up in here today, and it has also broken its downtrend. And that rebound in lumber prices is, I think, rather supportive of the housing market. So that is, I think, worth considering, that if people are starting to support the lumber price, it's because there's a shortage of lumber. And if there's a shortage of lumber, it's because there is more housing demand. So that should be good for the housing sector. And of course, that is another sector that pulled back really very violently all the way through 2018 and gave up almost its entire previous advance. So it is certainly looking more attractive today than it did then. So when we start to think about the outlook for markets, then this has been a an impressive rebound. There is certainly an argument that we have seen some of the worst of the selling pressure, but we're probably due for some ranging, that there is still a lot of uncertainty out there. And the outlook for the liquidity environment, it does look like it is getting better, that we're going to get a mix of fiscal and monetary stimulus from the world's central banks, and that should generally be positive for liquidity conditions. Eventually, we are going to get a recession, and the bond market it does appear to be pricing in that that potential for maybe in 2020, or even maybe 2021. That does seem to be a fair distance away from where we are right now, and we do not yet have an inverted yield curve. So that generally gives us a lead indicator of anything from 6 to 18 months out. So I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to a continued rally in the short term, but the first clear downward dynamics that we see on some of these markets is likely to represent a peak of at least near-term significance in the beginning of the first big consolidation following the rebound that began on the 26th of December. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.